Hare Krishna.
Thank you all for coming tonight to help us celebrate the appearance day of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Now, many of you know a little something about Krishna, enough to know that most people don't know who is Krishna. You won't be surprised to know that even less people know who is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Sometimes in this world, people feel that even if there is a supreme, such a supreme has nothing to do with this world. Perhaps there was some creator who's wound this world up like a watch and left it to go its own way. So whether there is a supreme or not, we're basically left on our own to sort things out for ourselves. Why will we come to this conclusion? Due to insensitivity. When we become trapped in very limited, repetitive patterns of life, we lose our ability to perceive higher happenings and higher events and higher knowledge. This is the problem with focusing our attention upon things that are supposed to satisfy our immediate senses. Satisfying your immediate senses is presented today as the ultimate goal of life. We were discussing in our session this morning that it's amazing how people no longer have an overall conception of what their life will be like. In other words, they cannot focus upon their life as a singularity, as a unit in time, and they cannot come up with some kind of game plan that's going to last the whole game. Why is this? Because society is breaking down, as we know it. You all know that the nuclear family is on its way to becoming a minority happening. I was speaking to one of our friends from Tauranga, and he's telling me that he has two children, 15 and 17. They're both in high school. The son, who's 15, has a high school class of about 25. And of those 25 students, only 3 come from a home in which the original mother and father are present. And the daughter, 17, in her high school class of 31, only 3 come from a home in which the original mother and father are present. Now, whatever you may think about marriage and divorce, the fact is this does show you that what is traditionally known as the nuclear family is becoming quite extinct. We were speaking this morning about how, let's say in the 50s, maybe that's when your grandparents lived. I was telling what it was like. Anyway, what my mother told me it was like when she was growing up, which must have been she must have been a teenager, yes, in the 40s. She said the normal thing was to go to high school. A few went to the university back then, not everybody. And you met a guy in high school, and you started dating. And then when you graduated from high school, you kept on dating. And then by the time you were 20 or 21, after a couple of years engagement, you married and you signed a mortgage for getting a home. And after a couple of years, when you saved up enough money, you had a kid or two. And in this way, your whole life went on in a preconceived pattern, in which everything was very non-controversial. Everything was very non-upsetting. All the social conventions were laid out very clearly. What you would do from birth till death. You had a pretty good idea 50 years ago what you would do from the beginning of end to life. What society expected you to do, what your family expected you to do. Not anymore, though. We're discussing how almost everyone today cannot give you an overall game plan of what their life is going to be like in terms of family, work. Generally, people are conditioned these days to just live from weekend to weekend. They focus upon what I'll be doing the next weekend. They can't see their whole lifespan. That's like a request to see the whole lifespan is like, wow, I mean, come on, what do you want out of me, you know? Well, yeah, I got a relationship or two right now, and we'll see how it goes. Yeah, I've got a job right now. We'll see how long they keep me before I'm made redundant or I'm downsized or something. I'm here in the country right now, but, you know, who knows, I might go to London and look for better job opportunities there. I've got to pay back my university loans. I might try to do that, or I might just skip the country and not come back. This is the way it is these days. There's no immovable structures in place anymore in people's lives. You can't depend on the family. You know, family members are here today, gone tomorrow. You can't depend on your workplace. Persons are let go from their jobs quite easily these days. What can you depend on? The only thing people have come to reliably depend on is, well, at least this weekend I know what I'm going to do. I know what pubs I'm going to. Yeah. I know what brand I'll be drinking. I pretty much know who I'll be with, or at least most of the weekend. Of course, I'm open to possibilities, but that's the way it is these days. Everyone has become accustomed to living with uncertainty, and there are no immovable structures in place anymore in life. There's no bulwarks, no more traditional bulwarks of nuclear family, lifelong employment. Everything is changing quite rapidly. It's amazing how this has happened over the years. So in this way, coping with this constant change and no stability, people have stopped thinking about a game plan for their entire life. How can they when there's so much uncertainty? You don't know who you're going to be with in a relationship next year. You don't know who your family members are going to be. A lot of people have been divorced twice. That means you're swapping in-laws so many times. Yeah, poor kids get confused, you know. Who's in the extended family? They don't even wonder about it anymore. Now, in order to cope with all this uncertainty and instability, the natural response is, I'll just focus on my immediate senses, my immediate goals, what I'll be doing this weekend, and who I'll be doing it with. And you might have a few major goals in the distant future. That means next year I plan to go overseas for a trip. That's the distant future. Next year I plan to do such and such. But in terms of looking at your whole life and making a game plan for your whole life, oh, that's too daunting for most people these days. This should show you how the attention span for contemplation and self-reflection has been destroyed. Because the ability for people to reflect upon themselves, when I say themselves, I mean their whole life as a unit, it's very difficult for people to see the need for understanding who they are, why they're here. They're just bouncing from one sense stimuli to another. One sense stimulus to another. They're bouncing. And the agility by which you react to each stimulus, that makes you well known and famous. Did you see how quickly he or she reacted to that one? Or this one? This is where your feeling of confidence and your feeling of self-worth comes from. How quickly you can react to the ever-changing flow. Yeah, I was with this one, but she doesn't want to be with me anymore, so then I got a hold of that one, and, you know, it's all working out somehow, at least for now, anyway. I'll tell you next month how it goes, and yeah, I had this job, but then I was made redundant, and I caught a hold of this opportunity, and people listen. Oh, yeah, Now you sound like you're definitely on top of things, you know. Very good. It indeed seems very odd, as you know, to listen to someone explain their whole life in terms of stable family structure all their life, same job most of their life. That sounds very odd these days. To find one person who's grown up in the traditional nuclear family with mom and dad at home, same set of relatives, who marries and who marries. It's getting more and more unusual. We're not arguing the pros and cons about it. We're just pointing out that people no longer have the traditional bulwarks to mark their life with. All the markers are swept aside. Everything's wide open. So it's very rare to find a person who's grown up in a traditional family, who's then going to marry and stay in a traditional relationship. It's rare to find a person who can stay 20 years at the same job, 30 years, or if not the same job, with the same outfit, the same company, the same bureaucracy. Very rare. As a way of coping with all this uncertainty, people just lower their vision. They just drop their sights and just focus on the immediate future. Their immediate concern is that my senses are getting all that they should be getting right now. Their political concerns don't go beyond that. How is the government satisfying my senses right now? Democracy simply becomes everyone's cry for sense stimulation at the present moment. Everyone's forgotten that democracy is only as good as the quality of the people that make it up. It's not that simply because there's democracy that automatically it's better. But people think, well, if there's a king, that means totalitarianism. I forgot the name of the famous Britisher who said a couple hundred years ago, "There's no word in the English language I despise more than king." So, implicit in that statement is that automatically, when one person's in charge, there are going to be problems. And people think, automatically, when there's democracy, everything will be all right because everyone has a chance to give some input. I was just reading in one magazine how the general of the U.S. Army in charge of the Middle East operations, every day before he goes to his office, his wife gives him a big hug at the door. That was very nice. He's and you know, he's been with the same wife, you know, from the beginning. So she gives him a big hug and whispers in his ear every day, make the world a safe place for democracy. Now, my point is, why do you think that automatically, if there's so-called democracy, that everything will be fine? You have to look at the quality of the people. If the people have no ability to reflect upon themselves, if the people have no high qualities, discipline, self-control, then what's the use of any political system? That is the point. Whether it's monarchy, democracy, this, that, whether a few people are deciding things, or many people seem to be part of the decision, it all doesn't matter if the people have no good qualities. You saw in that play, the drama, you saw about the age of Kali. In the Vedic literatures, this present day and age is described as the age of Kali, an age in which there may be technological progress, but the quality of the human beings declines. Although the speed of the computers is increasing, although the proliferation of electronic gadgets keeps increasing, people's personal qualities go down more and more. To the point that you could say, to make your political arrangements, you can go out onto the street and gather a bunch of barking dogs and say, okay, dogs, come together. We're going to have a democracy. Come together, we're going to have peace. And what do dogs do? Street dogs, they just bark at you. Be peaceful. Come together, make a decision. So when people's qualities decline this low, how can you have any kind of successful society? The qualities must go low because people don't have the ability to reflect upon themselves anymore. They can't get a grip on their own life because there's no structures in place anymore. There are no milestones. Everything is swept aside. And you just take each moment as it comes. In this kind of culture, in this kind of social environment, it's practically impossible for people to strive for enlightenment. Their minds are too agitated. Their minds are too disturbed. They have no high aspirations. They're just making it from one weekend to the next. The Vedic knowledge describes that in previous ages, which are lost to present human historians, in previous ages, people had higher qualities, so much so that they were able to spend 60% of their life in meditation. Who can do that now? The atmosphere is too agitating and disturbing. People, if they can spend 20 minutes sitting quietly, they think this is a great accomplishment. They can't conceive of someone spending 60% of their lifetime in samadhi. Now, how are we going to get the job of enlightenment done in today's circumstances? Not only should we be concerned about that, but the fact is that Krishna is concerned. Therefore, rather than just letting the world go on in its way, Lord Krishna sends representatives. Lord Krishna comes himself. But if the people's minds are so disturbed and they're so short-sighted and so focused only upon their immediate sense stimuli, How can they understand anything, even when the Supreme Himself, Krishna, comes? Today we are celebrating the appearance day of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, a particular incarnation of Krishna, you can say roughly, that Lord Chaitanya is an incarnation of Krishna. He comes to not simply give knowledge, but to teach what it's like to be a candidate for enlightenment by demonstrating the process of enlightenment himself. In other words, Krishna comes as his own student to show you how to be a better student. At the same time, Lord Chaitanya is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he's Krishna coming with a special mission to teach by example what it's like to be a student of Krishna consciousness, to be a student of enlightenment. That is indeed extraordinary mercy. Now, it's one thing for the Supreme to come to this world and make knowledge available. For that, we're very thankful. Lord Krishna does that in Bhagavad Gita. For those of you who are reading Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks. But what about if the people sink so low in ability to concentrate and reflect upon themselves that even if you speak knowledge to them, they can't get a handle on it? What to do then? This is the situation in the present day and age. What is Krishna's response? He comes as Lord Chaitanya, who not only gives knowledge, but demonstrates by example how to apply the knowledge. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is known as the most merciful appearance, the most merciful manifestation of Krishna, because not only is he giving knowledge, but also demonstrating how to apply the knowledge by his own example. An easy way to explain this, that we often do, is sometimes a teacher, when trying to show beginning students, 5 or 6 year old students, how to write letters, sometimes a teacher herself will take the piece of chalk and write a letter on the chalkboard as if she's doing it for the first time herself. Everyone knows, even though you're doing like that, you're not a student, you're the teacher. When Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, that's what he's doing. He's taking the role of a student, the perfect student, just to show us how to get the job done. Still, those who know understand this is not a student, this is the teacher. This is not an ordinary living entity, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, coming in the form of his own devotee, just to show us how to be practitioners in Krishna consciousness. And what is the prime method that Lord Chaitanya shows for achieving Krishna consciousness? Chanting the Maha Mantra and dancing in ecstasy. That is Lord Chaitanya's specialty. Because the situation in the world is so degraded, and people's good qualities have deteriorated so much, their powers of concentration have deteriorated, their minds are so disturbed and agitated, because of all that, Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya and demonstrates how you can become self-realized just by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and dancing. By singing and dancing to the right sound, the transcendental sound, that is Lord Chaitanya's gift. For those of you who are a little bit philosophically inclined, or who like knowledge, we have so many books. But quite a few persons, they don't read anymore. They can't. their minds are so agitated they can't concentrate on finishing a book. What to do about them? There are many people like that these days. Many young persons especially. Their heads are so blown out with heavy metal music and rap music and this and that, and they can't concentrate. So for them, if they simply take shelter of the Hare Krishna mantra, which is good for everyone, it's good for the most advanced sages, it's also good for the neophytes struggling to turn the corner in spiritual life. The Hare Krishna mantra is good for both the experts, the adepts, and the duffers. Don't be surprised that you know very few persons who are serious about their own enlightenment. Don't be surprised at all. That's the way it is these days. But even in such unfavorable circumstances for enlightenment, you can become successful at Krishna consciousness, traditionally known as bhakti yoga, the transcendental yoga of love and devotion. You can be successful by cultivating the Hare Krishna mantra, both individually and collectively. Today we are, as I said, celebrating the holy appearance day of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the most merciful manifestation of Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very strict about who can approach him. But when that same Krishna, when Lord Krishna comes as Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya, he's very liberal, distributing knowledge and love of himself without any stipulation. Therefore, the Vedic knowledge says, if you can at all understand what is mercy, you won't find anyone more merciful than Lord Chaitanya, who is Lord Krishna's special mercy avatar. Please think about these things and reflect upon how we can take advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, even though the circumstances we're living in today are so unfavorable for a calm lifestyle of enlightenment. So much anxiety there is. So much uncertainty. What can you depend on? All the traditional bulwarks, as we said, are gone. All the traditional markers of your life are swept off the table. In fact, people are known as being very expert and practical when they plan for uncertainty. I was in Australia a month ago. I don't know yet if this has hit New Zealand, you can tell me. But in Australia, the real savvy couples who, you know, after years of living an unmarried life, the ones who do decide to have a legal marriage, for them, the thing that must be done is not so much any kind of marriage ceremony, but the prenuptial agreement, known in Australia as the prenupt for short. That means the man and woman, they say, okay, look, you know, we've been living together for a while. Hey, we might as well sign the dotted line. But you know how it goes these days. In the event, highly unlikely, or one chance out of two at least, that we break up, I don't want you taking my assets that I brought to the marriage, and you don't want me taking your assets. So let's make a contract. You know, I'm bringing this amount of money and wealth to the marriage. You're bringing that. If we split, you keep what you brought. I keep what I've brought. It's very important now, Australia. The prenupt. They do that in New Zealand now? Hasn't hit here yet. It'll come soon. That shows you people are priding themselves on the fact they can cope with uncertainty. Okay, there's nothing you can depend on, so at least let's depend on that. So, my point is not so much what you think about whether there should be traditional family, or whether you think there should be democracy, or whether you think there should be lifelong employment at the same place. That is not the point. The point is that people's minds are so disturbed and so lacking serenity. Their environment doesn't give that. Their environment does everything to prevent that. So, what chance do they have to practice self-reflection? What chance do they have to see their whole lifespan? To get a reading, to get a bead on their whole life? What chance do they have? Still, you can become spiritually perfect in this day and age because Lord Chaitanya is distributing the Hare Krishna mantra. Those who seriously take up the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra can easily compensate for all the problems of the present day. We're going to do some togetherness chanting now. I ask your enthusiastic participation because this is a special day for us. You can help out. You can help us celebrate today by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra from your heart. Just one night only. You made the special effort to come and celebrate with us. So before the banquet, let us ask you one favor. Just for one night, try to put your heart into the chanting. And if you feel brave enough, you can allow yourself to dance with ecstasy. Just one night only. Don't ask for anything more. This will be your gift to us. While we're singing, just allow the body to naturally follow your chanting efforts. In other words, don't put the physical movements ahead of the importance of you singing the mantra. Let everything follow your singing the mantra. Do it from the heart, and in this way, we can take advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, who by personal example taught us this art and science of attaining spiritual perfection, even in today's upside-down circumstances, just by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. All right? So, maybe we can all stand up, and most of you know the words. If you don't, they're on this signboard there.